Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this January 18th Martin Luther King Day special edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM, and that's WBAI on the Pacifica Network. With the Pacific Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. Yes, our focus today will be on Martin Luther King, and yes, our special guest is Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, the lead sponsor on HR 40. I just received word from her director of communication. She is en route to the airport, but she will have time at least to spend a few minutes with us shortly. After we finish with her interview, we're going to be joined by attorney Nkechi Taifa, who has put together an incredible essay today on Martin Luther King, which we want to focus on. Before we get started, however, again, best wishes for a productive Martin Luther King Day. I want to give a shout out to Reverend Herbert Daughtry. Just learned in a meeting I was on the other day that he has just recently achieved his 90th birthday. And what an incredible warrior he has been, and certainly a decisive disciple of Dr. Martin Luther King. The other thing we want to continue to remind our audience of is be safe. Please be safe. We've got to take care of each other. We got to mask up and do our social distancing and also, you know, wash our hands and do all of those things that are important to save lives, to save our people, to save all people. But also we now have to be safe against another pandemic. The pandemic of violence, as indeed these white nationalist supremacists are targeting Black Lives Matter, targeting Movement for Black Lives, targeting people who are standing up. They're on a hit list. And so we need to be in prayer for them, but also whatever protective measures we can take, we ought to be willing to do that as well. The other thing I want to quickly mention is we are profoundly thankful to WBAI for partnering with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and the Black Family Summit. With our Community Cares Listening Line. Our Community Cares Listening Line is designed to relieve people of their anxiety, fears, concerns, or issues that are maybe taking place in the family, in the home, in the community. Suicide, domestic violence, child abuse, all these things are happening, unfortunately, under this tremendously stressful time. The Community Cares Listening Line just means that the community cares, we care. So we have a listening line of specialists who will listen and then also refer you to appropriate services if you so desire. The number is 877-327-6677, 877-327-6677. We'll connect you to the Community Cares Listening Line. But again, our show today is going to be devoted to Martin Luther King, and we say in his own voice, because Martin Luther King was someone who was dedicated to many things, including, you know, actually this whole question of an economic bill of rights. But he also, without necessarily calling it that way directly, he made the case for why we should receive reparations. And so the way we're going to do this is the Congresswoman will be calling in hopefully shortly. I'll be alerted the same and we'll conduct that interview. But right now, let's listen to the voice of Martin Luther King as he talks about why we should get a check.
From at the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with. And this is a reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
All right, that was Dr. Martin Luther King. Of course, he was talking about the Poor People's Campaign in part. He was talking about the effort to launch a campaign for an economic bill of rights, indeed. This is something that we really, really, really want to continue to talk about during the course of this hour, in terms of talking about the issue of reparations and the fact that Martin Luther King provided a rationale, because it's not only for enslavement, it is for all of those racially exclusionary policies that have occurred since slavery, that are derivative from slavery, like the Homestead Act that he referred to, like the VHA that provided and built the suburbs for many middle-class white Americans, the GI Bill that black people were denied in terms of, that stripped us of wealth, gentrification, which we're currently experiencing because it targeted black people in particular. And beyond that, the whole issue of communities that were destroyed by urban renewal. And so we are, these make the case for why we should be fighting for reparations. Now, as I said before, we'll be joined later by a dear friend, strong supporter of the Pacifica Network, particularly by way of WPFW in Washington, D.C. You've heard her on these lines before. It's attorney Nkechi Taifa. She has developed and written a very, very substantive and powerful piece, which is entitled, On This Stormy MLK Day, There's No Better Time to Call for Reparatory Justice. Now, what she does, and you can find this article, by the way, it is on the IBW website, IBW21.org, on the IBW website, IBW21.org. What she does is she also talks about what's happening today, how much terror we have suffered for years and years and years and years and years, and a lot of that suffering directly related to racial envy and white grievance and assaults on us in the way that I outlined in my soapbox commentary last week here on Vantage Point. By the way, that commentary, if people did not hear it, can be heard on the website, IBW. You can go to IBW21.org, IBW21.org, and you can hear that commentary in its fullness. Because, you know, I think we're all, particularly people of African descent and our allies and friends, are feeling that reparations are due and that it is the only way really to begin, and I don't say end, to address the issue of white supremacy and racial and systemic racism in these United States of America. And Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, I must say, has been the legislative champion for reparations. She has been the legislative champion inheriting the torch from the Honorable John Conyers, who first introduced the bill in 1989. But when we think of Congressman John Conyers, we also think of this day and how long it took to get the Martin Luther King bill done. But it was Congressman John Conyers who actually put that bill before the Congress of the United States and fought for it and organized for it. And we all remember Stevie Wonder coming out with, you know, Happy Birthday, Martin, and all of the mass rallies that used to take place. Usually they were on January 15th. Of course, the day that's his actual birthday was last Friday. But that was a key struggle. And Congressman John Conyers was the architect of that. He was one of the most progressive members of Congress in this era, without question, coming out of the Motor City, Detroit, and organizing with people like Judge Crockett and many others in that city as a progressive legislator. It was he who first introduced H.R. 40 in 1989 at the insistence, really, in a positive way, of one of his constituents, Reparations Ray, who kept saying to the congressman, we're not going to be able to actually make it in American society. We're not going to be able to really see a society change until black people have been paid for the work that we've already done, that black people must receive reparations. And so the bill was initially introduced in 1989. It was introduced really on the heels of the Japanese actually receiving reparations. A lot of people are not aware of that. The Japanese Americans actually received reparations for their the horrible, racially motivated, and I mean they were targeted. I mean they were citizens, and yet citizens of these United States of America were interned essentially in concentration camps in World War I because they were terrified of them, what they might do. And so eventually, and I would suggest in part because of the power of the of Japan as a nation, because at that point Japan was the second only to the United States as a superpower in the world, reparations were eventually forthcoming in terms of direct payment to the descendants. And so Congress used a similar framework to initially talk about studying whether reparations were due, and if so, what might the remedies be. He was really trying to get an educational piece done as a way of conditioning and getting people prepared, because the idea of reparations, at least in white America, was so unpopular. And in fact, truth be told, it was not necessarily that it was unpopular among black people or people of African descent. It was just that people didn't think it was possible. This will never happen. Let's focus on what we can do today and not really be concerned about something that's pie in the sky. Well, so it was important to educate black people too. And by the way, it was the kind of thing where actually it made sense to say, well, shouldn't we just study the issue? And people rallied around that notion. City councils passed resolutions. All of the major civil rights organizations did likewise. And there was a scenario where there was just a lot of education. Organizations like NCOBRA particularly was in the forefront of just, you know, getting these resolutions passed, conducting educational programs. I'm a lifetime member of NCOBRA as a coalitional formation and was happy to be, you know, involved in that process. But over time, we know that there have been study after study after study after study. I mean, even then it had been studied enough. But now what we understand is that the studies have been done. So therefore, the National African American Reparations Commission, including NCOBRA, really went to Congressman John Conyers about 3 or 4 years ago and said, Congressman Conyers, we need to change this bill. Not, you know, enough studies have been done. Let's change the bill from a study bill to a remedy bill. Let's just get out of the way and forget all of this stuff about, you know, we need to do these studies. And Congressman Conyers agreed. Now, previously, there had been no the number of co-sponsors, because you have to get co-sponsors for this legislation, had never exceeded 50, actually. Not even all of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus had been on board, actually. Not that they were necessarily opposed, but it was, again, the idea, well, you know, this is really not going to actually happen. Well, we changed the bill, and the bill now reads differently. The bill reads differently. It is now a bill to study, not whether reparations are warranted, but a bill to actually provide reparations, a bill to study and develop reparations proposals for African Americans. It is now a remedy bill. And that bill, under the leadership, the heroic, energetic leadership of Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, now has, at least in the 116th Congress, had 173, I think it was even higher, 175 co-sponsors. 175 co-sponsors. Senator Cory Booker introduced a bill in the Senate, which was a companion bill that had over 25 senators on that bill. And, of course, you were all aware during the presidential campaign, again, because of the increasing power of the black vote, presidential candidates were jumping all over it. And they were all, you know, they were tripping over themselves trying to talk about reparations. And we just told them, chill out. Don't be telling us what to do with reparations. Just support H.R. 40. And many of them came on board to talk about it. And then you had Movement for Black Lives, Ta-Nehisi Coates. You've had so many influences out there driving this conversation. And now local municipalities and local communities, you know, are out there doing reparations as well. And the National African American Reparations Commission has been deeply involved in that process. But we thought on this Martin Luther King Day that it would be important to also make people aware that indeed it was that Martin Luther King laid out the framework, laid out a rationale for why it is that indeed we should get reparations. And in fact, the other part of this that becomes so incredibly important is it's good to have these conversations on Martin Luther King Day so that it's not like he's like demystified. Because when you go to the Washington, what you see is it's almost as like King was like milquetoast. You don't see any of the radical kinds of statements that Martin Luther King actually made and put forth, because he was increasingly radicalized and pushing for a much more transformative politics. He had different stages. So that is what we hope to do today. We're going to be having you join us on the line. We're waiting for Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee to call in. In the interim, I'm going to ask that we also connect with our guest that has been standing by, Nkechi Taifa, if we can call her. And when Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee calls in, she will stand down and we'll get our interview with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee in. She is on the way to the airport. En route back to Washington, D.C., into these dangerous conditions. But we appreciate her entertaining the idea. We did list her as an invited guest, but I have received word that she does want to do the interview. And like last week, if you recall, we had Congressman Gregory Meeks. We had to rearrange things a little bit. He was supposed to be at the top of the hour. We ended up having him at the bottom of the hour, but it was very informative to have him, and we certainly would like to hear from Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. So if our studio operator would be so kind as to call Attorney Nkechi Taifa, we can get her into the conversation, and then we will be able to plug in Congresswoman Jackson Lee. She will yield, as they say, to our honorable sister, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, at that point. So if we can make that connection and let me know when she's there, we can roll right ahead, because we have a great essay by attorney and Nkechi Taifa on the website as well. So attorney Taifa, are you there?
I am here, Dr. D. How are you, Professor?
I'm doing fine, but I think we've been waiting. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee has agreed to join. She's on her way to the airport, so we were waiting, biding time for her to do that. She should be calling in, and I said certainly when she does call in, we will just have you yield. We all been working with her together, and we'll get her comments in, and then we can continue. But great to have you on today, and appreciate you doing so.
On this day.
First, quickly, would you talk to us just quickly about your new book? Because you've got a powerful book out there, Black Power, Black Lawyer. Tell us about that.
Yes, thank you so much. Black Power, Black Lawyer, My Audacious Quest for Justice. It is my memoir that basically tells my life story and does it in the context of the struggle of which I really came up through, and showing the importance of connecting the dots between the struggles of yesteryear and the struggles that are going on right here today.
Right. It is a powerful book. My family has purchased copies. I've got my copy, and it is an incredible book, and it has just taken this country by storm, because you are a great narrator. You are one of the best I know at telling a story and taking things and painting a picture with it verbally. Now, today...
Well, I appreciate that, Dr. D.
Coincidentally, today we were on the same page in terms of suggesting that Martin Luther King Day should be about reparatory justice. And so you have penned this really, really, really powerful substantive article, say, on terror and promise on this stormy MLK Day. There's no better time to call for reparatory justice. Why is your, in your judgment, there is, why is this, why is there no better time than today to talk about reparatory justice in terms of MLK?
Well, there's no better time than now, particularly today, and particularly with respect to the horrific events over the past almost 2 weeks that really has what I call in my article, opened up the casket to the terror that we as Black people have been experiencing, not just during our lives, but throughout history and throughout centuries. The casket has been opened, and now other people are beginning to see some of the pain and the anguish and the assault. They're beginning to see it upon themselves now, and I think it's going to cause people to look at issues in a different light. And reparations, in my humble opinion, is one of those issues that has been swept under the rug that's just now really coming out into the mainstream. And if nothing more, the events over the past several weeks, I think, should make it clear in everyone's mind that there needs to be a reckoning, okay? And that reckoning, Dr. Daniels, you know, needs to come in the form of reparatory justice.
And I know it's painful to do this, but, you know, in the spirit of my offer, what you and Pac are doing is not only taking us back, in a way, it's taking the whole nation back. But you talk about that casket being opened and the whole world now seeing it. And really, as you said before, the assault by these white nationalist domestic terrorists on the Capitol, a Capitol built by the labor of enslaved Africans, really is opening up this prism in a major way. So could you just tell us a little bit of what's in that casket historically? What are some of the, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee is now ready. So,
Keisha,
would you please yield while we bring our Congresswoman in? Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee?
Yes, how are you, Dr. Daniels?
I'm doing fine. Yes. Congresswoman, we so appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule to share some thoughts with us as you're on your way back into, dare I say, unfortunately, these dangerous times. We hope you're safe. Are you safe? Are you all right?
Well, it was a grueling experience, but resilience and the spirit of our ancestors certainly propelled me to resolve that I was not going to let democracy be extinguished or the history of America's virtues be extinguished. So, yes, I am resilient and standing and will be at the inauguration performing our constitutional duty.
Now, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, I've already introduced you as being the legislative champion, and I do mean that sincerely. I've worked on this issue for many, many years, and Congressman John Conyers was my dearest friend in the Congress of the United States. But you have been on fire. You have taken the torch from you've taken up the torch from Congressman John Conyers, and you have been on fire. Your speech introducing H.R. 40 is reverberating all across the country. So on this Martin Luther King Day, I've dedicated this program to reparatory justice and wanted you to come on to sort of talk to us about why, in the spirit of Martin Luther King, why we can't wait for reparations.
Well, I thank you so very much. What a day to be able to talk about H.R. 40. And in fact, I believe just last evening or numbers of videos and virtual engagement I've had the opportunity to participate in, I've never left H.R. 40 out of the discussion. But today is particularly powerful. And Dr. Daniels, thank you for all of your leadership and my dear friend, the late John Conyers. How honored I am that he passed the torch on to me, however, having been at his side and co-sponsored it for the many years that I had been in the United States Congress. But now we have a new journey, and a new journey, in fact, with the backdrop of the domestic terrorist attack on the citadel of democracy, the United States Capitol, built, by the way, by slaves on January 6th. Many of you may have heard that one video of that lost soul who said, "We built this place." And, of course, that information was completely incorrect, looking at his particular heritage. Though this place, the Capitol, belongs to all, slaves built the Capitol as they did build the White House. But what has happened is, as African Americans, we are probably one of the more patriotic groups of this nation, both in terms of our love and belief in this country and its virtues of freedom, equality, and justice for all, both in terms of our service to this country in the United States military, our hard work and backbreaking work that built this country economically, the unfortunate bondage that we were subjected to, of which there was never any compensation, including the 40 acres and a mule that was a technical and reality that was supposed to occur, as suggested by General Sherman on the southeastern coast, that said these slaves should get 40 acres and a mule. Unfortunately, the broken promises of Reconstruction, that never occurred. But we continue to be on the battlefield of service, whether it was sharecroppers in the Deep South, whether or not it was working in the homes and the places of challenge in the North, factories, cleaning buildings, cleaning homes, all of the hard work of America, we had no shyness to. We were called to do it. We were, in some instances, forced to do it. And so in this day of Dr. King, who is a dreamer, who is a man that chased after injustice to establish justice, a man who talked about the arc of justice bending as it should, and one who gave us the words, "Why we can't wait," certainly in 2021, we cannot wait. We have had an array of over 200 civil rights organizations that have galvanized around H.R. 40 since I've been able to now take up the helm. I am very pleased and I'd say blessed to have over 173 co-sponsors. Never have we had such a far-reaching list of co-sponsors from west to east, north to south. And my colleagues who background race, religious, association are not mine. We have deep Southerners, Northerners, Midwesterners. We have conservatives. We have liberals and moderates of members of Congress who found that there is credibility in a commission to study and develop proposals for reparations. And there are people that understand that we didn't pull the word out of the air. Reparations is an international concept used with the Japanese when they were interned in the United States, used and continue to be used with the Holocaust victims, and it has been used in other crises around the world. It has been used by universities in Sweden that has partnership with our friends in the Caribbean, who also obviously had slavery. And universities have engaged in trying to repair their history by giving restorative and reparative justice. So my main issue is for this progressive, international, some circles controversial, and just response to the over 200 years of bondage, brutal bondage, that then translated into 4,000-plus African-Americans that were hung, that then continued on into the 20th century and generated the likes of Emmett Till and others unnamed that are buried in unmarked and unnamed graves in the South. Black people killed along dark, windy roads. We always hear relatives say, "I don't know what happened, Uncle Uncle Joe. I don't know what happened to the family." Lost in the viciousness and vileness of hatred of the hate groups and white supremacists who took lives in the Deep South. And so who could argue with H.R. 40, a remedial, reparative relief and challenge to America's heart? And after what I went through on January 6th, yes, I was in the gallery on in the midst of our constitutional duty, not able to hear. We had no technology. We had no phones because we were not supposed to be engaged in looking at any social media. We did not even know that Donald Trump was spewing out ugly words of show your strength and take your country back. Or Giuliani saying combat is time for combat trial or trial by combat. And, of course, Donald Jr. saying send them a message. One other member of Congress saying it's time to kick the posteriors of those locked down doing our constitutional duty. Only time we noticed, Dr. Daniels, of this episode was Republicans started running off the floor, and then we heard screaming and shouting, get down, get out, as we proceeded, a few members of us that were in the gallery because of social distancing, trying to make our way around that gallery all the way to the other side, since these individuals, terrorists, domestic terrorists, had already made their way to our area. Hearing the gunshots, seeing armed plainclothes individuals, police persons, who many of whom are neighbors, many of whom fought off with their bare hands these terrorists who came on false premises that an election was stolen. So having been through a horror that probably did not match the horror of our ancestors for 200 years and then the Jim Crow era in this country, I can't imagine any American who wants to heal this nation, wants to unite this nation and bring us together, being shy, being hesitant about a legislation that is premised on not only just law in the United States, but on international law. So we're moving forward, and we need all of your listeners. We need all of them. Take one, teach one, add one. Encourage your various members of Congress across the nation to co-sponsor H.R. 40. By the way, introduced on the very first day of the 117th Congress. I'm very proud of that. With
That's
co-sponsors
right.
already, almost 100 plus. Now we're up to almost 135. We're reaching our numbers. We want to go as far as we can go. I think we need 218. But that's what we need to do as we move toward a hearing, move to what we call a markup, which has never been done for this bill, and then to the floor. But most of all, as we see a new and brighter day with the wind blowing on December, I keep saying December, I guess I love that month for some reason, January 20th, 2021, the peaceful transfer of power that has transitioned in this nation for at least 46 times, starting on the 20th of January, and the transfer of power, when Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, as a team, there should be no hesitancy, no fear, no challenges to us moving forward on H.R. 40. It is to those who have gone on before us, who died violently, who served this nation, that we owe them this debt of gratitude. So, Dr. Daniels, thank you for your enormous leadership, traveling this journey for so many years and galvanizing 200 civil rights groups, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, John Legend, a variety of talented persons, every civil rights group that we can call, all standing for H.R. 40. And I believe it can be the most healing and soothing of moments in our history. Why? Because 81 million people voted for a change. And they voted for the reflection of a presidential ticket that reflected the new America. The new America includes an acknowledgement of a dastardly moment in America's history, the original sin, an acknowledgement by apology, and action by our deeds. Isn't that a tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King, who spoke words, but offered to all of us as his living legacy that it must be our deeds that can pay tribute to him? H.R. 40 pays tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Well, thank you so much, Congresswoman, eloquently and powerfully stated. And by the way, belated happy birthday to you as well.
Thank you.
And you don't seem to be slowing down anyway. You're the Benjamin Button of the Congress because you're getting stronger by the day. So thank you so much. Please travel safe. You'll be in our prayers. And we so appreciate how you represent us with such fierce intensity and but also compassion and principle. We thank you so much for your leadership. And thank you for taking time out to be up with us on our audience here at WBAI. Thank you so much, Congresswoman, and travel safe.
Dr. Daniels?
Yes.
Dr. Daniels, if I may give one smidgen for those wonderful words of support, and I need them, just to say that I am calling from the great city of Houston and just came from a day of caring with the Black Heritage Society, gathering goods for those in need. In the tradition of Dr. King, but just a little bit of history, we had the first Dr. Martin Luther King parade with Daddy King, who gave us the opportunity in 1978. So we are glad to be the mother of all the parades. And our parade, of course, today was virtual, and that was unique. And we offer to everybody a blessed Dr. King's Day, and let us, in his tradition, make his legacy a living legacy. And that will be part of our effort, will be the passing of H.R. 40. Dr. Daniels, thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Well, thank you so much. All right. Again, we are privileged to have that right here live on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. That's what we're able to do across the dial. And I'm honored as the host of Vantage Point to be able to have back-to-back Congressman Gregory Meeks last week giving an eyewitness testimony, and, of course, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee on her way to the inauguration. Now she is now the vice chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. She's the lead sponsor on H.R. 40, and she has done a magnificent job. And you talk about synergy and spirit. Attorney Nkechi Taifa, it's almost like the two of you are in mind sync, right? It's almost like she's quoting from your book. I mean, quoting from your article today. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I said, wait a minute. Did you already send her a copy of your article?
No, but you know what it is? It's just like you and me, you know, great minds think alike. I mean, you know, and all of the thinking is leading towards one conclusion, reparation. That's the beauty of it.
Well, before we let you go, would you please, she started to talk about some of the things that you referenced, because this article is powerful. I mean, it's powerful. People need to just take time and read it. But you were talking about opening up that casket and showing what's in that casket. So would you just talk to us a bit about, you know, some of the moments in that casket that have traumatized Black America, and the pain and anguish, and yet we're still resilient. We ain't turning around, but it's that the reality is there, and we need to talk about it.
Well, absolutely. Let me just first say where the metaphor of the casket that I always use comes from. It comes from none other than the lips of Mamie Till Mobley, the mother of Emmett Till, who demanded an open casket for the world to see what the terrorists had done to her son. She did not have the body groomed, the amputation of the ear, of the, you know, everything, you know, the bloated face was all there, and it shocked the conscience of the world. So we use this metaphor to talk about things that are buried and have not come to light. There have been no amends for the illegal kidnapping, for the cultural assault, for the nearly 300 years of forced free labor, followed by over 100 years of convict lease labor and black codes and sharecropping and penal system and lynchings and mass murders, systemic racism and Jim Crow. I mean, it goes on and on. Gerrymandering, redlining, educational inequities, mass incarceration, the health deficit, instances of terrorism against whole communities such as Rosewood, Florida, and Elaine, Arkansas, and Wilmington, North Carolina, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, and so many more. And the assault, the cultural assault upon our traditions and our cultures and our religions, the epigenetic intergenerational trauma that Nana Pat Newton taught us about so well, that it travels in our genes. So with all of these things that have been buried in the casket and now are beginning to come to light. But one other thing that's been buried that's coming to light now is jumping out of that casket also. We're seeing people's true colors. The Proud Boys are busting out of that casket. We know we can see who they are now. The Boogaloo boys, the QAnon conspiracy theorists, and the list goes on and on. So while we are healing and learning from all of the abuses that have been going on for centuries against our people, we're also coming to light who the perpetrators were. We're talking about the children, the grandchildren, the great-great-grandchildren of those same persons who perpetrated those original international and domestic crimes against us.
Wow. Well, again, people can go to the IBEW website and see and read. We do need to read the article on the terror and promise on this stormy Monday. There's no better time to call for reparatory justice. Very, very powerful, powerful, powerful narrative in the way that only Sister Nkechi Taifa can do. Before I let you go, Sister Nkechi, reparations is becoming very popular, frankly, now. And everybody is talking about it. And I wonder, and what I'm also noticing, and I don't think this is being done, in some instances it may be, but by and large, it's well-intended. People are now saying, well, what about reparations for Native Americans? Well, what about, I think it's AOC the other day, there was something that went down in Illinois is pushing for some legislation. And then was saying, well, what about there ought to be reparations for Latinos? And then, you know, I got a message from someone who's saying we dare not leave out white working class people who were brutalized in terms of organizing labor and whatever. How do we, in a sort of positive and constructive way, talk about reparations for African Americans without sort of offending others? Or in another, it's another way of saying, how do we lay out the case for the particularity of reparations for African Americans?
Well, there's been a long standing, everything with respect to history, long standing uninterrupted history in terms of the case for reparations for Black people in this country. Nobody talked about, we should hold up on the African American reparations campaign and what came to fruition in 1988 because of the situation with Black folk. No one talked about the Native American Claims Act, and we should hold off on that until we address the issues dealing with Black folk. I mean, every group, each injured party has their own reckoning to be dealt with. We are in solidarity with it all, but we must deal with this issue. The outkeeper, our race, must deal with this issue right here. Right now, it is timely, and it is it's been swept under the rug. And the final thing I'll say also is we do really need to really get clarity on definitions. And I know with NARC, the National African American Reparations Commission, of which you convened, you so skillfully and masterfully brought together experts across the country on this issue. It's really looking at definitions, reparations, reparatory justice, restitution, and the like, because some issues might fall within another type of definitional framework and others might fall into another. So we're in the process now of sorting out all of these things. But the one thing that is primary, this should be no backward movement with respect to reparations now for Black people in this country.
Absolutely. You've been hearing and listening to Attorney Nkechi Taifa. Black Power, Black Lawyer is her book, The Audacious Quest for Justice, a memoir by Attorney Nkechi Taifa. It is on fire. It's blazing all over the internet. People are gobbling it up, and you need to gobble it up as well. Attorney Taifa, thank you for joining us on this program. We had to juggle it a little bit in order to make it work, but it worked out well. The complimentary interviews with you and Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. So thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Daniels.
All right. Okay. Well, we're going to throw our phones open now. Running a little bit late. We had hoped to have more time for it, but we didn't know what time Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee would call. It's in Kuumba, right? That's the spirit. You have to be creative. That's we have to be able to twist and turn and to make these things work. But we certainly want to hear from our listening audience now on this Martin Luther King Day. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Your reaction to the case for reparations being put forth, really, in the phrases that were offered up by Martin Luther King, the interview with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, as well as our discussion with Attorney Nkechi Taifa. So we want to go to our phones while we're waiting for callers to come in at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. If our studio productions would display that quote from Martin Luther King one more time, and then we'll go right to our listening audience.
Very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
All right, that was Martin Luther King saying we're coming to get our check, figuratively speaking. 212-209-2877. We'll probably get a couple of callers in, your reaction to what you've heard, but also the question of who else? Should other people get reparations as well? There's been this call for other people to get reparations, and Attorney Nkechi Taifa addressed that. Interested in getting your opinions on that as well. 212-209-2877. Let's go immediately to our listening audience. Good afternoon on Martin Luther King Day. You're on Vantage Point.
Beloved community, greetings. Ron, please don't hang up on me.
Goodbye. Can we go to our next caller, please? 212-209-2877. We have someone who's chronically wanting to harass me for transgressions in the past that I've confessed to or not confessed to or whatever, but it's we're talking about Martin Luther King today. 212-209-2877. Again, callers can, we have just a few more minutes before we go off the air. So we have open lines right now. If you'd like to call 212-209-2877. In the meantime, again, if you want to check out the article by Nkechi Taifa, it is powerful. It is really powerful. There's no better time, she says, to call for reparatory justice than on Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King was moving in a very radical direction at the end of his life. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Hey, how you doing today? Listen, I think the American people need reparations. They've been so exploited. The majority of the American people need it. They really do. But, you know, we have a problem in this country because we are fighting one another. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. Thurgood Marshall, the black Supreme Court justice, when he was working as a Supreme Court justice, he was writing up legislation when it came to civil rights. And he put down all people. He put down blacks, whites, and everybody. And yet there were some, I think there were black people who protest against that. And it shocked Thurgood Marshall. Why are you protesting about whites having civil rights? And I think that's the problem. Those people have a big voice today and are running things.
Have a big voice today? There's no such thing as a big voice for people in black America who are not in faith. On the contrary, black people have been the conscience of this country, advocating for everybody, everybody. So if there's some minor voice here or there who may not, out of anger of what has happened traditionally, I mean, historically to us, who might say, well, we don't want to do that. That's one thing. But most of the major civil rights leaders, most of the organizations, most black people have always stood for the right thing for everybody. The question has been, where is the other way around? As we, you know, the majority of other people coming to push for and to embrace reparations for African Americans. And by the way, we have to make a distinction between ordinary public policy. That's what Nkechi Taifa was talking about. I mean, Today, we need a domestic Marshall Plan for black. We need more than reparations. We also need some racial remedy policies now. But that also applies. There is a case to be made for helping the Latino community, the Asian, the South Pacific and Island community. And yes, white working class people need help as well. If they would only wake up and understand that we're not their adversaries or their enemies, we could really forge a coalition and really make some change. That's a part of what Martin Luther King was talking about at the end of his life in terms of the Poor People's Campaign. So we are not the problem. We will not accept responsibility for progress not moving forward, not given the brutality we've suffered. We have thousands and thousands of our people who have been lynched. And so there's no comparison in terms of the different suffering that we've had to undergo. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Okay. Let's go to my next caller. Happy or productive Martin Luther King Day.
Hello?
Hello, you're on air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
So I'm glad you just said that because black people are a very forgiving people. We've been through a lot and we always understand injustice, and it's difficult for us not to jump in and help everybody. But it's been almost to our detriment that we always go out and help everyone else in their cause, but when it's time to get to the specifics of our cause, no one's there. And in fact, lots of times those folks then turn around and step on us to get to where they want to be, which is usually to assimilate as close to white as they can. So I understand that other groups need to have reparations, but we gotta focus on the black agenda, not folks of color. That doesn't mean we don't understand everybody else's, but we gotta focus on black right now because everybody gets ahead of us, and we're still in the same spot. We're falling further behind.
Right. Appreciate your call. I think we can squeeze in one more quick call. If we have one, 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Nope.
Oh, we don't? Okay. All right. That's fine. Look, really appreciate the patience of the audience as we've tried to put these programs together. We're going to do a big fundraising program, I hope, on, I think it's January the 8th. Typically, I would be preempted on that day for fundraising. But we're going to do a program highlighting John Henry Clark. And that program is going to be, and we're going to use his speeches that we have in our archives as premiums, particularly the one, White Nationalism, Enemy of Black Nationalism. Dr. J, that's right, Dr. Leonard Jeffries will be joining us for that show, as well as Dr. Gregory Carr, phenomenal director of the African American Studies Program at Howard University. He has a huge following out there. And we're going to be talking about the threat of white nationalism that Dr. John Henry Clark warned about, as well as people like Ronald Walters and others here on. So stay tuned for that program on January 8th. We need to support WBAI. I'm hoping on that day we can raise a big chunk of money to continue keeping WBAI not only alive, but WBAI in a position that it does not have to do so many programs in which we're appealing for resources. The way it's being done now, I really appreciate it. You know, we don't have to have it all at one time. It's spread out. Great job being done by the general manager and program director on that piece. So I want to do my share and my part on January the 8th. But as for now, we enjoy you having been with us today on this Martin Luther King Day. Be thinking about what King would be thinking about and how we need to rise up and continue to be about the business of bringing about transformative change in his name. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels saying we'll see you again here next week on Vantage Point.